welcome to the Post Acute Point of View podcast, our discussion hub for healthcare technology in the out-of-hospital space. Here, we talk about the latest news and views on trends and innovations that can impact the way post-acute care providers work. We'll also dive into how technology can make a difference in today's changing healthcare landscape for home and facility-based workers and the people they care for. Let's dive in.
Thank you to everyone for joining us. I'm certainly not going to read my own bio other than to tell you that I have the pleasure of working in this industry for many years now. And as part of that, my objective is just to go out there and try to see what's happening in the industry and look at business partners and determine how can we work with them. And today we're going to have the ability to talk with how the business partners use data that we can provide. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and get into this and talk about the objectives that we have that we want to share with you today. The first is that we're going to dig into managing Medicare cap and how you can kind of manage and optimize kind of revenue opportunities under that model. So if you're on the phone right now, and or if you're logged in with us and you say, hey, you know, Medicare cap, we don't really deal with that. Stick around. There's more for you in the next data points here to be able to, in the second objective, learn how to proactively manage all these different kind of compliance related issues, like these multiple external surveys that result as trying to manage your caseload in today's hospice environment. So we're going to talk about using data for part of those challenges as well. And then we have some opportunity to really understand how we can use that data from a benchmarking and referral statistic to help your business, and how we do that under kind of a business development angle and the data being used for that. So there's a little something in here for everybody. We're excited to get started with you. I also read a stat yesterday that said that 90% of all the data that exists today has been generated in the last 2 years. That's a stunning revelation to me. And one of the things that I see after being involved in the technology space here for so long is that, you know, there are tools and EMRs, EHRs are really good at gathering tons of data. But now the real topic seems to be AI and machine learning and things like that. It's really starting to do the things with the data that we would have. And you really have to, you know, siphon through so much because of the volumes. It becomes harder to use and you get overwhelmed with the data in day-to-day life. And so what these tools for AI and machine learning are starting to do is to really grab that and be purposeful about what are we trying to do with the data and what can it help us with to solve our day-to-day problems of running a business. And so today, with our presenters on today, they're going to be people who saw opportunities to use data to solve certain problems and people who are using it today in the real world and the impact it's having on their business. So we'll get to those as we go through. The other part is the job that, you know, we play in being able to share this data then. And we talk about interoperability, and that term is used all the time in different manners. But I've been involved in multiple things we've shared with Hospice News, some of the results of, you know, interoperability. People like people can take referrals electronically, and that's one interoperability. But they use different terms. One of the biggest things I think that's important is in some surveys that were done earlier, the result and the most resonating definition of interoperability is not really about connecting to something. It's about once you do, how does it get used, right? And that's the really important part that we will talk about. If I were to use just a kind of a common everyday example, before there were always manuals on how to change the oil in my lawnmower, right? But there weren't YouTube videos that now did that. And thanks to YouTube, I know how to do that. And I know how to change the, fix a leaky sink and a thousand other things that this data is used for. So all the data that existed before in its hard copy format was fine, but making use of it on the other end is really what interoperability is about. And so working with organizations that have a use for this data and have been able to target it is what we're really focused on doing. And that's where we bring in business partners. I'm going to turn it over to Drew. And Drew works for Hospice Dynamics. And we've created this nice partnership because we said, look, we have all this data. We see it accumulating. But Drew and his team, he'll go into it here, have real life experience, and have said, hey, we think we figured out how to use this in a great way. So I'm going to turn it over to Drew for a bit to kind of share his experience on how that data gets used. And then we're going to get back together on the panel side. So Drew, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Thank you, Grace and Tanya. I will echo what Rob said. I certainly will not read off my bio, but you get a good idea of our experience in terms of who is Hospice Dynamics and kind of the story of Hospice Dynamics. We're a group of former hospice owners and operators. Very early on, saw a demand and lack of automation in the hospice industry. As fate would have it, we sold in 2020. Felt so passionate about the need for automation in the hospice industry that we partnered with AI data scientist and began working with a large national hospice organization who provided 7 years worth of data for us to be able to use their EMR to then build our algorithm and make it patent pending. We built and launched Hospice Dynamics in January of 2023, and the momentum that we've received and the success that we've experienced is an indication that the hospice industry is ready, as well as the healthcare industry is ready for leveraging predictive analytics or just data analytics in general. And all of that is only possible through EMR and EHR integrations, and that data that we collect there is what builds the entire engine that drives our software along with several others. Again, I'd say we felt so passionate about the need and lack of automation in the hospice industry. There's really three main areas, and we refer to them, and you'll hear me say this in just a little bit, three core pillars of utility: financial, regulatory, business development. What we experienced was, outside looking into the industry, is that 20% of hospice organizations exceed the Medicare cap on an annual basis. What a lot of organizations don't take into account is 40% of hospice organizations experience what is a Medicare cap utilization issue. So they're not capturing as much Medicare revenue that CMS is allowing. So we saw that as a challenge. Everyone, I'm sure, that's in the hospice industry can attest to the fact that the recent significant surge and all of the regulatory audits, which come with some pretty significant fees, that's a problem. So how do you get in front of that? How do you mitigate those? And then from a business development, this is a chronic issue with hospice organizations across the country, is how do we educate referral sources and providers on how to identify hospice appropriate patients sooner? When do they get that gift of hospice? And again, that's all data that can be retrieved from the EMR and then augmented in a way that we did that. So an example of being able to leverage that technology and data within the EHR, we were able to create an algorithm that takes that data from the EMR with every single patient and then designates a predictive length of stay for every single patient on time of admission throughout their time on service. And again, I keep on stressing, the only way to do that is through using the data that's supplied in the EMR. To give you some examples, you know, going back to addressing those challenges and how it can be mitigated by leveraging the data within the EMR, is from a financial standpoint, if you're able to accurately designate a predictive length of stay for every patient, you're much more apt to being able to provide a Medicare revenue projection. And because of that EMR integration, we're able to do that for the first time. Also provide a highly accurate Medicare cap calculation for every open cap year, and then take that data and say, okay, this is where it looks like you're going, but how do you make changes in your behavior of your hospice organizations to influence that change and get to where you want to be going? From a compliance standpoint, if you had a highly accurate predictive length of stay for every patient, how great is it to be able to identify those patients that are going to be the most vulnerable or the highest risk for any sort of external audits or surveys? How do you hedge those off on the beginning and then create a much more targeted internal QAPI audit instead of auditing your patients that are currently with the length of stay of 180 days and above? How great would it be to, you know, use that EMR data to identify patients with a predictive length of stay of 180 and above? Of course, mitigating those external surveys and fees. And then just being able to benchmark your referral sources as soon as a referral to admission comes in, of identifying the quality of that admission, and then continuing to educate those referral sources on their behavior as it relates to their peers and national averages, and just providing them with a tool to assess their referral behavior, again, on identifying hospice appropriate patients quicker. What we really lean in on and double down on is, not only does the EMR data allow us to provide hospice organizations with a lot more effectiveness, but what we really are passionate about is it is going to significantly mitigate any future failures. And that's really where the biggest pain points come in.
Awesome. Thanks, Drew. Appreciate that. What we're going to do at this point is we are going to just kind of get into a conversation here and bring in Tanya. Tanya is with Sage. And so what we're going to do, and Drew, come on back in as well. We're going to do this as kind of a panel discussion and really start off by talking about how does this impact things in real life. So Tanya, if you can start off by kind of just giving us an introduction of yourself, your organization, that would be great just to kind of level set on that as first of all.
Thank you, Rob. So I am with Sage Family of Companies, as Rob said. I currently have the state of Georgia, which is Agape Hospice for Sage. We are in Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and Georgia. So I've been in hospice for 20-something years, and I've seen a lot of things come and go and super excited about these opportunities.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And what's your role there, Tanya?
I am the Area Vice President of Operations.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate that. I will start this off kind of as generically as possible, because I know you were an organization that kind of saw the value of this data. We've had conversations about it in the past. So instead of boxing you in with maybe a specific question to get started off, I'll just kind of ask, what is it about the data that you guys see that was kind of attractive to begin with that said, hey, our operations could really afford ways to look at this differently?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, for so many years, we basically had a hindsight or reactive approach to looking at CAP and the revenue and how that affects our business in many different ways. And so for me, this is just an opportunity to really be proactive around it, whether you have locations that have a potential risk or you're one of those 40% that, you know, underutilize. So it's just more about a proactive way to approach it versus, you know, looking in hindsight.
You know, the whole predictive nature of things changes the game on that, right? So
right,
giving the mass amounts of data to be able to do it. I know that sometimes whenever we get in joint conversations with people, there's kind of this immediate, we use this to do CAP management. Yeah, we're not really near the CAP. And sometimes you kind of get that reaction at first, like, what mm-hmm. is that? But I think there's kind of more there. And I'm just wondering, like, that whole mind process of, hey, I'm not really near it, so I don't necessarily look at it. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I know you guys look at that piece a bit. I just heard you say about the business opportunity as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of curious on your take there.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that some providers, they don't really look at CAP because their length of stay is so short, right? But I think that we get so caught up in the operations piece of the business of looking at ADC and growing our ADC that we're really not focused on the type of patient that may be coming through the door, whether it's a long length of stay or a short length of stay patient. And we all know that that can affect our CAP, you know, negatively or positively. So I think this allows us to really be able to focus on that specifically, because it's, you know, to be able to look at the length of stay of a referral or a patient and then, you know, be able to predict that out for that particular diagnosis, for that particular referral source and all those things, it really helps from a length of stay management as well. So that's really a big value that I see in it. The other piece of it is from a strategic planning perspective. Like, I really see it enabling us to better prepare our business for the future, and especially from like a business development aspect of the business. And I'm happy to go into that a little bit further if you wish, but that's been the biggest opportunities for me, not just looking at where are we on the radar and all those things, but actually managing the business as a whole, linking that clinical component from all of those new audits that we're, you know, all seeing every single day from a regulatory perspective, but also a financial component. But then how do we use it to really change the culture of our business as a whole from a sales perspective?
Yeah, you know, one of the things you just mentioned is pretty interesting to me. You mentioned referral sources and mm-hmm. kind of the business data side of that. So are you kind of sharing this data with referral sources, and maybe what's the reaction you're seeing to it if you share it with them, those kinds of things? I think that's kind of interesting. And we don't necessarily see people planning as much for that. So many organizations plan for that because they see they have room under that cap.
We've started a weekly meeting where we're using this from a business development perspective. And so our directors of business development are able to use this data with our sales team so that we can then use it in the market to show the referral sources. You know, I love to use the example where Dr. Smith says, you know, oh, my patients aren't dying, or, you know, I referred 4 patients last month and this and that. But what he doesn't understand is the type of patient he's referring, again, may have only lived 3 days or may have a projected length of stay of 1,000 days. So being able to take this data, drill it down literally by referral source, whether that be a facility or a physician, being able to look at the particular patients that that referral source referred that were admitted to the service, and then looking at that projected length of stay is game changing from a strategy and business development, in my opinion. So we are using it every day with our sales team, with our leaders, and really learning how we can strategize to either bring a shorter length of stay patient or a longer length of stay patient based off the dynamics of that particular provider number.
That's interesting because the mix of those, right, is really what makes up the success under that cap.
Right.
Hey, these patients aren't that lucrative. Let's go get them all, right? You only have so much capacity optimized.
Right.
Right. Drew, can you talk a little bit about just kind of the technology that supports what Tanya's saying and kind of the terms of, you know, how much business can I go after and not put myself in risk and kind of how you support the decision-making process that Tanya's talking about?
Of course, you have the AI machine learning technology and structured and unstructured and natural language processing of being able to identify the behavior, not only of the world of hospice, of what a certain primary diagnosis does to not only your census, but in terms of, you know, your Medicare revenue opportunities. But we're able to drill it down so specific to not only the behavior of the hospice organization itself, but the average daily rate associated. You do have the ability from a technology standpoint to do a what if analysis of going, okay, where do I need to focus my efforts as it relates to referral sources, i.e. primary diagnosis, that is going to maximize revenue opportunities while staying compliant and overall providing the highest level of patient care. And to Tanya's point, I mean, and our VP of sales, I'll give him a shout out because I think he's going to trademark this response, but we all know COVID killed the cookie rep. And so what value are you providing and how are you getting, you know, meaningful value-based conversations with referral sources? Well, talking to them about empirical data as it relates specifically to their referral behavior, that's going to get you a lot more legs than just an edible arrangement or a tray of cookies.
Tanya, are you seeing that? Can you maybe comment just on like the real life experience of taking that data and how it changes the conversation a little bit with some of the people your team's meeting with?
Absolutely. Again, we're just starting to use it in that way, but we've already seen it be beneficial just with our own physicians, you know, as we're including our own physicians in the operations of the business. And how do we go to your peers with this data and impress on them how they can change, you know, the culture of the business as well. So again, I think, you know, especially with our physicians, they only know what they don't know. They're just referring, you know, because, okay, this patient came by, you know, I'm going to refer the patient, but they don't really understand the dynamics around that referral. So I feel like it's a great way to educate them as well, especially your physicians that are not specialists or maybe hospitalists that see that patient for a hot second and then they don't follow them. And so I just find it very, not just from a business perspective, but from an educational perspective as well, of helping them understand the different diagnosis of how that impacts our business. I think they appreciate us being able to provide this type of detailed information.
You know, it's interesting because in working in interoperability for so many years in this space, like one of the things you would constantly hear about is like this black hole once the patient gets transferred to, you know, some sort of home-based care. And I think some of the things that you're doing like that helps close the loop out from that perspective to say, hey, it's not there, right? So
yeah, it's bridging the gap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Drew, just to drop back a minute, I keep hearing predictive length of stay, right? But there's people who have, you know, brought up topics about when do I know? How often do I know? I think one of the unique things is kind of the now capabilities to take the data and do it throughout the process. Can you just explain from a technical standpoint when you know that? And when you know that something may impact that from just a timeline kind of standpoint?
Yeah. So with our technology specifically, again, it's all based on EMR integration and the quality of the data that's inputted. But in terms of an initial process, the patient's entered into the EMR. Hospice Dynamics is going to scrub that patient profile, all the diagnostic, demographic, historical information. It's going to cross-reference it against our entire very vast Hospice Dynamics database and identify similar patient profiles and then designate that initial predictive length of stay. And that's really the easy part of the software. Where it really gets sophisticated is every single documentation within that patient file, whether it be from a chaplain, a CNA, LPN, RN, it's going to scrub that patient documentation. And then based on any sort of identified improvements or decline, it's going to adjust that predictive length of stay accordingly. You know, Tanya and I talked about this, that the beauty of this, you know, of using this technology with the EMR data is it's also a training opportunity. We've seen a lot of organizations take our software into an IDG meeting and going, okay, you're saying one thing, this software is saying another, where are we off? Oh yeah, it's because I've got a nurse that's not properly documenting, or I have a certain discipline that's kind of skewing this particular algorithm. So it is an opportunity to really protect the integrity of the documentation that's taking place within the EMR.
So that's kind of interesting, because when I hear that you can get the prediction on the early side and that data is available, Tanya, that early in the process, it also makes me want to ask, like, you were talking earlier about the different kinds of surveys that you're in. So you can kind of get into risk mitigation mode. But from that standpoint, can you tell me maybe some other ways that uses, and I'm thinking particularly, like, does palliative care come into play, if you know, and does it benefit you from that standpoint? And then how do you use it from that standpoint of all those long-term, those surveys that you referenced earlier in detail? Is it helpful because of the timeliness side, and how does that get utilized?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad Drew mentioned that, because we literally did that just yesterday with a group. We drilled down to the specific patients of a specific diagnosis that was driving a certain length of stay, and sent that to the team and said, okay, let's look at these. Let's talk through this from an eligibility perspective. What does the documentation look like? And are we the appropriate level of care for this particular patient, right? And I think that's where, you know, I view hospice as a level of care, and we need to make sure that we're the right level of care for that particular patient. It may be that the patient is more palliative in nature. It may be that home health is the right level of care for the patient. And I feel like this information enables us to help determine that more efficiently and get that person in the right level of care. If it's a documentation issue, then that allows us to, you know, provide education to that particular case manager to ensure that the record supports the eligibility of the patient. So that's where all of these different audits come into place, the TPE, the ADRs, the CERT audits, all those different things. We want to ensure that, you know, we're doing our diligence in order to get paid for the care that we're providing an eligible hospice patient. So again, I have been able to see so many different facets and ways that this data can just improve the business overall.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point, because over the time, like, any of us who've spent any time working in this industry know that there are so many people out there trying to do the right thing for the patients all the time. And sometimes it's not always great for the business. On the other hand, we kind of do those right things that we think are right for the patient, and those kinds of audits and surveys kind of start to push back on us and say, hey, why did you do this? Right. Like, from the standpoint of one of the things I think I've seen with different solutions out there is one of the things that it does is it really helps you to say, hey, I'm not now looking at this from any perspective other than what the data is really telling me about this. And I hadn't thought about it, Drew, until you said about the training component of it. Like, does it match? Why does this not seem to match what our eyes are seeing? Because obviously the data is only as good as what comes in to the equation. But I do like being able to see the feeling of giving the people who I know from years of working in this business are trying to do the right thing for the patient, have the information to be able to make that decision, that also when they do get that audit or whatever, the information is there and it's vital and continuing that operation. So Drew, I know you were in the business for a while. Was that, as you were thinking about this and doing it, was that some sort of driving factor towards some of the technology as well?
Yeah, and we don't love admitting this, but yeah, there was one provider, we had 9 different providers, and one was kind of our problem area, not only from a CAP perspective, but we were really kind of kicked in the teeth with the ADR perspective, and it far outweighed our perspective of a huge liability from CAP. We had no idea the backlash from a financial standpoint of just lack of certain documentation or just improper, incomplete documentation of what that means to your business as it relates to a liability. But yeah, we identified, hey, if we knew that this patient was going to be at that particular level in terms of a length of stay, and we could have, you know, proactively mitigated that to make sure that, hey, we flag this patient, you better make sure that every single documentation associated with that patient is complete, thorough, and compliant as possible. We wouldn't have had the liability that we had, or not even liability, because a lot of them, you know, we were able to take care of them from an appeal standpoint, but just the time and the effort, you know, the litigious aspect of it, it focused our attention elsewhere from where it should have been, is providing the highest quality of patient care. We were focusing on mitigating those fees. How do we get in front of it, as opposed to doing what most hospice, and I would imagine all hospice operators do, is patient is first and everything else, you know, falls behind. But it did take, you know, our attention elsewhere. So
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, Bonnie, you talked about using this on a business development standpoint. I asked you about how the referrals are receiving it. I'm kind of interested in kind of your business development team. And like, this is a different concept. I think many of us that have spent years in sales, you know, we think, oh, you know, our relationship is everything. We get, you know, I mean, salespeople don't read a lot of data. I know only as one who was for a long time, and getting them to adopt the new one. Can you talk about that a little bit and kind of their buy-in? Because as a, you know, a long-term person who was kind of in the midst of some of that change, I'm curious how your team has adjusted to the approach.
Sure. So one of the things that I loved when I introduced this to my business development leaders, because when I first, you know, got to see this, I was like, where has this been all my life? Right.
Right.
When you've been
right.
in the business for 20 something years, it would have been nice 20 years ago. And right. So the beauty of it is when I shared it with my business development leaders, that was the same reaction. They immediately saw how this could impact our business and their business plans and their strategic plans and their routing schedules, you know, all these things that we look at when we're developing our business plans. It was eye-opening for them to be able to see, because again, I think we tend to manage those aspects of our business in hindsight or based off what was, where this allows us to see where we are today. It's lifetime data of the patients we currently serve, and how does that impact our business going forward? And so they were very open to accepting this, embracing it. I have one side of my business that has rolled it out to their actual sales team. And again, it was like, wow, like this is truly going to help us, you know, move in the direction we've been trying to go. So I did not meet resistance. So maybe I'm the anomaly with this, but they all just really embraced it and automatically could see how this could change our business plans. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, I mean, the one thing that's also true about salespeople, if it positively impacts the bottom line, they tend to get excited. And so we saw that potential. But there's also then the kind of training of it. Did you find like, hey, getting them acclimated to this was a hard project or something that kind of was intuitive for them because of, you know, being a little bit more data driven versus maybe a little more fuzzy on some other things?
Yeah. So I'm a very simple thinker. And so I would say that I was able to bring this up, pull up the dashboard, navigate through it. The first time I was showing them, I was like, I'm not the expert by any means, but I can get you to where you need to go. It was user friendly for them. It wasn't a lot of drill down and, you know what I'm saying, like filter this and export this. I think the simplicity of it helps them want to use it. And like you said, most salespeople are not data driven. They don't want to see spreadsheets and all those things. They just want to go sell your business, right? And yeah. And so I think that piece of it is why it's been so accepted. The other thing was, is they're like, oh, I can't wait to go show this to Dr. So-and-so. Again, because it's a true picture of where your business is today, it really helps you impact it tomorrow.
Yeah, that's great to hear, because if that's a big training effort and you see it takes a lot of time to results, maybe it doesn't get adopted, you know,
right.
Terms as well. I know you're a simple thinker.
Absolutely.
So is that an intentional design based on the experience of the folks who are doing it, that You know, sometimes when we hear data, we think very accounting, CFO type of stuff. But is it intentional as you start looking at data, cause your end users, that kind of comes to the surface in it and brings it all to a head? And we're going to toss out data that doesn't make it relevant to the tool?
I would love to say that, yes, this was our business model and it was all part of it. A lot of this, like what Tanya's doing and a lot of what our customers are doing, is educating us on how the tool is being optimized. Yes, we did want, you know, organizations to get a much more transparency into their referral behavior and everything associated with that and be very proactive. But what these organizations are doing with that data and augmenting it internally and more importantly, externally, of saying, we're going to provide you referral source with much better optics into how you refer your patients in the world of hospice. What we didn't take into account, and we've talked about, all right, how do I go and maybe target certain referral sources and business based on the predominant primary diagnosis? We completely missed the mark on what a lot of organizations are doing, is they're using that tool to identify the type of salespeople they're hiring. Because if they're going in and they're looking at primary diagnosis and they're going, listen, based on what this predictive analytics is telling us and based on where we want to be, we're going to have to go get more primary diagnosis here, which is predominantly in a different discipline as it relates to maybe more physician family offices. Well, as we all know, the rainmaker and assisted living facility referrals is not the same one that's going to go into an office building and talk to physician offices. So we've been amazed at how organizations are using this in hiring practices and getting that certain personality and salesperson that's more familiar, maybe has a network and some business development experience within those certain types of delivery of care, and then optimizing them that way. So to answer your question, Rob, yes, a lot of what customers are doing is what it was designed for, but we're completely amazed on a daily basis on how customers are using it for something that we'd like to take credit for, but there's just so many different variables in which it could be leveraged.
Yeah, I think that's the point, right? Now that the data is there and you start being able to focus it, you are going to find people like Tanya and others who find creative ways to use that. I had not even heard the story before about hiring differently. You think about that and what background those people have is definitely going to join into the success of that. So that's pretty interesting to me. I just wanted to kind of make a comment that I think kind of takes us outside the business level a little bit, because I love hearing what Tanya's saying, what Drew's company's doing. When you work in this industry a long time, you start out as a job and you see the good work that people do and you start to try to really get dedicated to helping them. But when you also have a personal incident and, you know, and go through where your dad goes through hospice for a long period and you see the benefits of the service that is provided there over a 5 or 6 month length of stay at the end of life and how that benefits your dad and your mom and everybody else, right? You start to become then an advocate to say, how do I spread the word about this? And I think these tools are developed in a way to make sure that that happens, right? To make sure everybody knows that what a great benefit it is to the family and the payer and the providers and everybody else because of the good work that you guys do. So just kind of on a personal level, I'll say thanks for everything that you guys are doing to do this with you, kind of the battle to get people and say, hey, 48 hours is not enough time in hospice, right? So let's do what we can to get people over. And I love seeing technologies and partnering with people who do that. So, Tanya, anything you want to add?
No, just appreciate the opportunity to be able to share, you know, our story with how we feel it's changing the business and hospice as a whole.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to thank Tanya and Drew both for kind of joining here and be able to go from there. So thank you so much for joining me.
That concludes the latest episode of the Post Acute Point of View podcast. We have a lot of guests and topics coming up that you won't want to miss, so be sure to subscribe. To learn more about Matrix Care and our solutions and services, visit matrixcare.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you for listening. Be well, and we'll see you next time.